Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. The Fearless WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. The Challenging WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and thoughts, and reports, and things that, you know, you don't find in the normal media, that you don't find out there nowadays. And this is the station that does it. Here we are in New York, bringing you all over the world nowadays because of the Internet. There's so many people listening. Information that you just, you know, you don't hear anywhere else. This is your class of education. This is the place where you can learn new things, things that are relevant. Instead of just hearing the same old stuff repeated again and again, we have been talking on this program, The Positive Mind. We started 2 days ago to do a report on touch. Touch, the mother of all sensations. I really like that. The mother of all the senses. Touch, that on Tuesday we spoke with Jean Liedloff, L-I-E-D-L-O-F-F, who wrote a book called The Continuum Concept, who in her studies in South America discovered that because of the amount of contact between people down there and the physical contact that they maintained, especially the contact between parent and baby, that there was a whole bunch less craziness going around. That things, people were just more at peace, more harmonious, got along better. Nobody owned a car. But of course, you know, I mean, if you go down into the deep Amazon, you're going to find this in little hidden places where people are not. But it went a little further, and then we did some further research yesterday with Roberta Maria Atti and I. We went a little further, and we looked at some of the origins of touch and what happened with touch and why we, four-legged animals, who used to walk around on all our hands and our feet. I guess horses don't have hands, do they? They just got 4 feet. And what did that mean? When suddenly we started standing up, Homo erectus, right? And started standing up, and the gibbons started standing up, and the monkeys started standing up. Suddenly they had hands. And what did these hands do? These hands have senses in them. Sensors, things that could sense things. You could feel things with your hands. That your cat doesn't even think of doing, or your dog doesn't think of doing. You know, when your dog touches you with its paw, sometimes your cat may need you, you know, K-N-E-A-D. And she presses against you, and she's releasing these oils from her hands onto your body that says, you belong to me. And that's what they're doing. But that's, I mean, how much touch do they have there? No, their whiskers have far more sensation than their paws do. Hear about the dog who walked into the bar with his arm in a sling in Texas, and he said, I'm looking for the guy who shot my paw. Okay, so cats, dogs, they have very little sensation in their hands because they don't have hands. They have paws, and these are like feet. Humans, tremendously sensitive hands. Hands, we developed a thing called a prehensile thumb, this thumb that grabs onto branches. We have fingers. Just look at your hand. Look at your hand right now. Think about what you could feel with that hand. Think about how wonderful it is. Take your other hand and run it across your hand, and you'll be amazed at the thrill that you'll feel shoot up your body. Look at that. Look at that. Just do it again. Just look at sensation. What a sensation. What a sensational hand. Yeah, it makes you want to scratch it, right? Now scratch it, right? More sensational hand. Sensational. You didn't do it yet? Try it out, my friends. This is The Positive Mind. You learn things here. What do you think it's like to clap your hands together? Right? You ever clap them together real, real hard? Clap them together. I'll do it with you. Right? And then you hold them up in the air. And look at all that sensation in your hands. Hands, amazing heat. Put your hands a quarter of an inch away from your face. Just hold them up to your face. And hold them just a quarter, maybe an eighth of an inch away, and you feel heat. See? Put it in front of your mouth and feel your breath. Feel the different textures. This is all your hand is capable of. And if we look in your brain, we find a part of your brain that responds specifically to this thing, which is the sensation in your hands. So what we're looking to do is to have you be aware that touch is an essential part of us. And that as we lose touch, you know, and we do, because we went from writing, for example. Remember, we used to write and use our hand when we wrote. Used to send information to our brain when you use your hand. When you start typing, you don't use as much sensation. In fact, the hand is becoming a little obsolete. In fact, now that we're looking at people who are afraid to touch because they're afraid of inappropriate touching. And everybody's afraid to touch everybody else, which I fully understand and I fully respect. And I think I'm glad that people are more cautious about who they touch. I'm sick and tired of the man who feels like he could touch anything he wants or any person he wants and not consider what's the effect I'm having on that person. But along with those cautions are going people abandoning these incredible qualities they have of touch. There are couples who don't touch each other. There are people who hire pets. They get pets. They buy pets to touch, and they don't touch their mates. I know mothers who don't touch their children. Don't touch them at all. But very likely to groom their horse. You know, very likely to touch anything else, you know. So we have to somehow get back the importance of touch, and we'll talk to you about it. But as well as touch, there are other types of nonverbal communication that I wanted to address today. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. What are the other ways in which we communicate besides touch and besides words? And a man came in to see me today, and he said to me, you know, he said, my wife and I have these arguments. And every time she speaks to me, I feel like I have to defend myself. This is a couple in distress. And he said, the reason I have to defend myself is she's so much better with words than I am. Because his vocabulary was somewhat limited. He never needed it. He's a tradesperson. Certainly intelligent. Certainly equal on every other level, but didn't have the facility with language that his wife had. So she'd chop him apart. She'd set up a little trap. She'd say to him, did you, when you came home, did you notice the car in front of the house? And he immediately knew a trap was being set, and he said, I don't know exactly how to, and did you notice that that car had a woman sitting in the front seat? Yes, I knew you'd look at her, and it would just continue being some kind of thing where he couldn't talk back anymore. He couldn't argue his point. He didn't have the verbal skills to communicate effectively. He didn't know how to stop it, so he became enraged and became violent. And one wonders, and he wonders, you know, how do I possibly do this? I don't have the skills. Among our nonverbal skills we have many other ways of communicating, and words are sometimes the worst. The absolute worst. Leon Russell, great writer of songs. In one of the songs he wrote, he said, we tried to talk it over, but the words got in the way. Beautiful. All right, another way that we communicate with each other is called somatic expression. Now, somatic expression is like a body voice. It includes things that happen to you that communicate things to you that are communicate something to the other person, such as blushing. You blush, and the other person sees it. You know? You're red in the face. We know you're embarrassed. Or something like that. Perspiring. Right? Communicates something. Changes in breathing. Here's an interesting bit of information. You know when a doctor takes your pulse? He's checking your pulse, and he's counting the number of pulses, you know, how many times beats per second, right, by holding your wrist. How many beats per minute, actually. And he only counts to 15 seconds, and then he multiplies it by 4. But do you know at the very same time, the good physician, and I mean the physician who's really there, He's also counting the number of times you take a breath. They look at breathing rate at the very same time. So when there's somebody who's taking your pulse, he's checking your breathing rate. And he's trying to see if it falls within normal. If you have a breathing rate that's much faster than normal, he gives him certain information. If it's slower than normal, he gives him information. If you don't breathe, it gives him information, too. He's probably working in the morgue. All right. Somatic experiences. Flushing. Muscle tension is another way. You know, you get very tense. That's another way of expressing something. Moisture in your eyes is a communication. You talk to somebody you love, you say something to them, or you talk to somebody and you give them some difficult news. Those eyes fill up, and the minute you see those eyes, this communicating without a word. Without a word. Blanching. You know, blanching. Blanching is when all the blood rushes from your face. And it's usually out of fear. People blanch with fear. And what that is the body is saying, you know, there's something very scary out here. We need all the blood we've got available to use it for the smooth muscles so that we could fight our battles. You don't need it in your face. You know, you don't need the blood up there for now. And so it pulls the blood away rapidly and you turn white with fear. Flaring of your nostrils, that's another communication. That's a way of, you look at somebody and suddenly you're talking to them and suddenly their nostrils are getting bigger. Either you're talking to a silverback or you're talking to somebody who's getting angry. Unconscious movement of the body parts, that's another somatic expression, you know, without even knowing it. A person suddenly crosses their legs. They're talking to you and they cross their legs or they cross their arms or they put their hands in their pocket. Now, those are three signs that say, I don't feel too safe with you. You know, there's something about what's going on here. You know, if you're a salesperson and you walk around with people who are, you're trying to sell something, and that person starts putting their hands in their pockets and leaving them in their pockets, not a good sign. You're not doing very well. Pick up on those cues. If you're talking to somebody who's sitting opposite you and they cross their legs, not a good sign. Means I don't feel as open to you. If they cross their arms, it's the same thing. They call it body language. Visceral experiences, numbing, you know, and temperature changes. All of these are somatic expressions, some of which are meant just for you. Now, another way of communicating with people is called, another topic is called personal space. Many factors affect the distance in which individuals experience comfort in approaching or being approached by others. So personal space is another communication skill. How close you stand to somebody, how far away you stand from somebody. You know, power structures, role relations, gender relations. You know, will you get so close to a woman as you would to a man? Would you move back according to your gender? Social relationships, cultural factors, you know, like if you're in India, there's much more of an awareness of class structure. So do you move closer to somebody who is, you know, who's of a higher part of your class structure? You know, something you might not do. Past experience with boundary violations is all a part of what you do with personal space. If you've been somebody who's been physically abused, you don't let yourself get as close to people. You stand back because other people have hurt you. So you put an additional wall in, and that verbal communication is how you use your personal space. This is Armand DeMille with you, talking about touching and non-touching and talking about ways of non-verbal communication. These are ways that people talk to you, and they don't even talk to you, but they're talking to you. You don't need words. I mean, you need some words. I'm trying to think of a case where you need words. You know, where's the bathroom? It's hard to say without the words, but you give the answer by pointing. Eye contact. Eye contact is another way. It modifies the meaning of other nonverbal behaviors. For example, people on elevators or in crowds adjust their sense of personal space if they agree to limit their eye contact. So if you get in an elevator and it's very tight, as long as you keep your eyes down, you could squeeze in with them. You know, so the eye contact, it really in some way amplifies whatever the other nonverbal cues are. So if you're across the room from someone, the other day I sat down at a restaurant and I swear I thought I recognized a person who was sitting four tables away. And I thought I recognized them, but I wasn't wearing my eyeglasses, my distance glasses, and so I was just squinted and I looked over and I said, well, maybe I'll get another hint from their voice. Because I don't feel like getting up and going over and saying to somebody, aren't you, you know? And so I was staring at them. And the guy caught my eye. And he stared back. And I thought, well, do I recognize him? But he was the wrong guy who caught my eye. See, the one I was looking at who I thought I recognized wasn't looking at me. It was the other guy who was looking at me. And he was looking at me as if, what are you doing looking at me? And I smiled. And I kept looking. And now he thought it was really strange. So he started glowering. You know what glower is? Like scowling, you know. He thought it was a challenge. So space makes a big difference. Luckily, it turned out not to be the person I knew. And as they passed by, I said, oh, I thought you were somebody I knew. Just to ease the tension. Because they had spread around the table that I was staring at them. They didn't know if I was a menacer or not. They didn't know. You know, what do they know? Somebody's staring at you from four tables away. There's a thing called paralanguage. This is non-lexical voice communication suggesting emotional nuances. They include inflection, intensity, tone, pitch, or pause. So when you're talking to someone, a pause amplifies or reduces the intensity of what you're saying. It just got you, right? If you're talking to somebody and you raise your voice, it increases the intensity of what you're saying. So I was watching the World Cup and I was just amazing as I watched Sicily driving down for the last goal. Well, okay, maybe not Sicily. Tone, you know, the tone of your voice. Sometimes the tone of your voice conveys something, and the pitch, of course, how high it is, how low it is. It's called paralanguage. So it's a language that's not a language. This is Armand DeMille. I'm talking to you about different ways of nonverbal communication. Then there are gestures. Gestures are often unconscious or unintended modes of nonverbal communication. Among these, you can include a raised eyebrow. You know, raise your eyebrow at me. A raised eyebrow. You know that look of sarcasm that people have? I don't know what they call it when they kind of... It's a mocking look, like you say something and people are mocking, you know, they have this mocking look, kind of they lower their smile. It's like an inverted smile. I don't know what you call it, but it certainly is a gesture. Gesture of sarcasm. If you tell somebody something is important to you and you tell them it's really, and then they make a face at you. You know, it hurts. It could hurt tremendously. Narrowing eyes. Right? That's another one of the facial gestures. Folding your arms, you know, pursing your lips is another nonverbal gesture. Changes in your breathing, again, they affect, it's a gesture. Then there's the last of these is called adornment. Adornment, the semiotics is what the word is called, semiotics. Is the science of emotional and psychological impact of signs and appearances. Semiotics. You might all know it from, you know, sign language, from the signing of semiotics. These elements, very often the signs, get this, signs of language are clothing is a sign of language. You see, by the clothing you wear, you communicate. It's a nonverbal communication. How you wear your clothing is a nonverbal communication. If you wear your buttons open at the top or wear them closed at the top, it's a nonverbal communication. If you makeup is another nonverbal communication of adornment, you see, semiotics. Jewelry that you wear, even your belt, even your pipe, you know, even if you smoke a pipe. Do people smoke pipes anymore? Very few, huh? It's really amazing. So this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. There are thousands of ways that we communicate, different ways besides touching and verbally. There's a lot of ways that we communicate that are hostile, and we don't mean to be hostile. I know how many people have said to me, I don't know why, but nobody seems to like me. And if I spend time with them over a period of time, I'll find there are a lot of nonverbal things that they're sending out that are telling people, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I don't want to be bothered with you. So you know what I want to do? I want to be able to, since next week, we're going to have some special July 4th program, which will not include the positive mind. So I thought today maybe we'd get a chance to get some of your calls in here about some of what we've been talking about touching, being touched, about physical contact. And our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. I want to be able to talk to you about problems that you may have had in nonverbal communication, in things that, but before I go, I want to talk about sexualization of touch. You know, Americans have difficulty conceptualizing physical contact as nothing more than emotional nurturance and tend to avoid touch for fear of being misunderstood. Now, a group of people, Hunter and Struve, who were great scientists back in 1998, they talked about the fear of sexualization of touch. Sexualization of innocent touch has a long history. You know, actually, there was to avoid self-touch, Roberto Atti mentioned this earlier, in 1928, people advised mothers to tie their babies' feet to opposite sides of the bed so that they wouldn't rub their thighs together, because they thought that this was encouraging an undue sexuality. They're advised to pin his nightgown sleeves to the bed so he couldn't touch himself. John Watson, who was a parenting expert for the first quarter of the century and the author of Psychological Care of the Infant and Child, judged mother love as inherently sexual and warned that a mother's affectionate touches and kisses were a cover-up for a sex-seeking response, and that the mother's desire to have the baby breastfeed was because the mother was doing it for sexual satisfaction. And this was the big advisor for the first 25 years. Diaries from the time show poignant entries by mothers who guiltily cuddled and kissed their babies in secret, many of them feeling guilty for being unable to follow the dictates of the experts in psychology. Oh, God, spare us. Okay, so anyway, a number of people researched this, and they found that Americans, more than anybody else, seem to be confused about touch. Really, really confused. Yes, in certain parts of the world, there are people who touch, and all of their touches are sexualized. They tend to be sexualized. Men with young women tend to be sexualized. The young woman feels punchy because she gets on a subway, gets on a bus. Things happen to her because of men being sexualizing touch. Most Americans embarrassed by nudity. You know, most Americans are embarrassed by nudity. And they cover their children's bodies so they can't see each other naked. And they cover their own adult bodies so they won't overstimulate the children. In fact, if a therapist hears that babies were walking around naked and mom was walking around naked, we sometimes report it as overstimulation of the child. Aren't we foolish? Of course, and you know, you do it in Sweden and it's the norm. These experiences are in direct contrast to the exaggerated, eroticized forms of nudity our children see on billboards. I mean, we talk about nudity. What do the kids see on billboards, in the media, in unsolicited emails, on the web, in pornography? You know, I mean, that's what the children see, is what nudity is about. So we've lost its the whole sense of its naturalness. So we are going to take a call if you're on the line, 212-209-2900. I'd love to speak to you about this. Let's hear from you. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, welcome to WBAI.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Can you tell if someone loves you by the way they touch you? And I mean a relationship where it's unclear if that's the case, not a parent-child, but a heterosexual relationship.
You know, okay, let's take this. This is a great question. Let's take this. Where's that for you? Let's take this a little further. Do you have somebody in your life who touches you?
Yes.
What is your question about his or her touch?
I guess just when you're in the beginning of a relationship and it's unclear, but there's a feeling of love, and you're not quite sure what makes up the feeling or makes up the chemistry, but it's there, and it's pretty strong. So could you tell by the way either you lie down with someone or the way they touch you that there is love? So a more verbal emotion based on the non-verbal.
I hear you. So, you know, I mean, here's the thing we know. We know that proper touch will release oxytocin. Oxytocin is a hormone in the body that will make you feel a great sense of well-being. So if you touch somebody properly, as in a great massage, as in petting a cat, they are going to feel this oxytocin kind of bonding with you. Oxytocin kind of bonding feels like love. I mean, that just feels like the felt sense of love. You look up, it's like, I feel wonderful. So if somebody was really skilled at touching people, then they would have everybody who they ever touch would be feeling this way towards them. You know what I mean? And if somebody had really warm and wonderful hands, you know, and they were touching you, people would respond this way. So no, I do not think that touch alone and the feeling you have when being touched by someone is a criteria for true affection of the kind of love that you're talking about, which is a different than the physical. You see, it's, I mean, the physical love affection, it certainly feels like love. I know enough people who consider sexual passion to be the criteria for love. You know that if they could just be naked with each other and having sex all the time, they would glare at each other and look at each other and they would feel this tremendous love feeling. That's the oxytocin stuff. But does it mean, you know, this is the guy you marry? Nah, I don't think that's enough criteria.
Right. Well, and that makes it difficult because chemistry is so undefined, but yet you feel it.
Well, actually, chemistry is very well defined. It's just to you it's undefined. You can actually look at it, and it's so amazing. It's so well defined. It's more well defined than any of the emotions. You know? So you could feel it. I mean, you could just feel sensation. What happens when you get a massage?
It's different.
Of course.
It's different. It's a release of tension. It's not affection at all, but it's a release.
Yeah. So you're talking, you got to look up the whole physiology of oxytocin. I'm not saying there's not love there. But bonding itself is not the proof of affection, of love. And by love, I mean the all-encompassing, I accept you for exactly what you are, with no desire to change you for my own needs, kind of love.
Something to work for.
Something to work for. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure, good question. Nice way to kick it off. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking much more to you about this, and I'll play a little music in between, bring you back something from the past that I just adore, love. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes and then take your calls.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Bob from Celestia.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York.
Rock could be so good, but we make it all so rubbishy.
On WBAI 99.5 FM, the Caldwell Chronicle is on the air. I'm Earl Caldwell. Tune in for our broadcast every Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., right here on listener-supported Pacifica Radio in New York City.
Love and happiness. Yeah. Something that can make you do wrong, make you do right. Yeah. love. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, talking about how she can make it right. Yeah, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. Nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Oh.
It's just so nice to have it right up there at your fingertips if you need it. Love and happiness, beautiful Al Green. Gee whiz, Al. I've got that on an album cover where Al Green is so young. And he did this so long ago. Love and Happiness, Al Green. Some of the great, great music of our times, I think. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI, the Al Green station. We are bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, people on the telephone, help you lead a more positively minded life. And we've been talking about touch. We've been talking about the different way that people touch. You know, I mean, how touch is kind of disappearing from our life, that our fingers are now, you know, do you understand what a love letter is between two adolescents? It's thumbs. They use thumbs to communicate with each other. It's just your thumb on a little text message email. And, you know, you thumb it all the way. You don't use the rest of your hand. So that's it. Whoever thought that that prehensile thumb that came from us falling out of trees, you know what that thumb was for? It was to protect you from, help you grab and help you not fall from the tree. Do you ever have a dream that you were falling? You know, if you were to look at you falling out of the dream, you'd see your hands would be grabbing. You know, even though you're laying in a bed and you're not falling, your hands would still be clasping, grasping. And the idea of that is it comes back to when you, believe it or not, were a monkey. Now, I don't mean you really were a monkey, and I don't think humans were monkeys, but I think we have a monkey ancestry in common. And what used to happen is, at first, our hands developed, but one of the great usages of our hands was grasping. We were able to grasp food. We were able to pick up food and run with it, and we were able to grasp a tree limb so that if we fall out of a tree while we're sleeping, because the safest place to sleep is up in a tree because there are not many monsters coming up in the tree to eat you, right? So we would sleep up high in the trees, and if we fell, we had this prehensile tail, a tail that would grab branches, and we had a hand that would grab. So when people have dreams of falling, they're always grasping with their hands. It's like it's back there, you know, one of those things that we didn't have to use. But nowadays, what do you need your hands for, right? It's all going out of style. I mean, everything, even just no more hands. And so you don't type letters anymore, you know, you don't write letters. You barely eat with your hands, right? You have utensils everywhere, you know. Anyway, children and adolescents, you know, people are afraid who do not use touch. Adolescents are particularly sensitive to being touched because they see it as a method of control from elders. When an elder touches an adolescent, the adolescent kind of resents it because you're saying you're bigger than I am. And your big fat hand on my relatively smaller body is not very welcome. So adolescents tend not to respond to adults who think they have the freedom to touch these kids, right? Just I'll touch you because I feel like touching you because you're smaller than I am, right? Or even smaller than that, children when they come by. You know, big hands are a sign of being an aggressor, of being bigger than they are. It's not always what you want to convey. Touch with elders. I mean, elders experience so much touch deprivation, so it's kind of amazing how much there is missing. And they have found, I can't tell you the number of studies they found, that when they introduce touch into, or massage, into the lives of people who are staying in homes, it extends their lives. You know, just touch. They need to be touched in some way. Get them a pet, and the pet touches them, even if they as they touch a pet, they live longer. Of course, there are always the issues of gender and gender difficulties. So you have to be considerate of what it means. But I don't want you to abandon it, my friends. I don't want you to abandon. Touch is one of the most essential elements of human development, a form of communication, critical for healthy development, and one of the most significant healing forces we have. In his seminal work, The Touching the Human Significance of the Skin, Ashley Montague, back in 1971, brought together a great array of studies demonstrating the significant role of physical touch in human development. Touch has a higher degree of cultural relativity in many ways, the whole way the touch is used. And it's very confusing. In Western society, sex, love, power, and dominance are dangerously confused, and they're all confused by, you know, how people use touch. It's just without consciousness. Here's all I say to you, my friends. Put your mind in your hand. Put it there. Touch with intention. When you touch another human, if you're going to touch them on the shoulder, let's say you want to comfort somebody, and let's say there's somebody who's having a panic attack. Now, one of the ways we know as clinicians that you help somebody who's having a panic attack is you put your hand on their shoulder or on their arm, but you don't move it. You want to give them a steady sense that they're connected to the earth, so you give them a feeling that they are connected. Now, this is, of course, you're also being considerate of whether the person is going to welcome the touch or not, but the last thing in the world you do is move your hand fast and fast on their bodies. Do you ever have that with somebody, you know, somebody comes over to you and they start taking the hand and moving it back and forth on your body? Like, it's a terrible feeling. You don't want stimulation. You want to be known. You want to feel solid. You want to feel connected. So when a person's having a panic attack, put a solid hand on their body. Make a rule to yourself that you connect every inch of your palm, every bit of it, that there's no airspace between you and the thing you're touching. That's a solid connection. That's a solid feeling. Even when you shake a hand with somebody, make that hand be a real handshake. We did a handshake test just the other day among the trainees in our psychotherapist training and supervision group. And we had everybody shake everybody else's hands, and it was amazing. We had one person who was shaking with such forearm strength that it told you, stay away from me. And we had another person who was so afraid because her hands were small that she'd get swallowed up in another hand that she kind of shook with her fingertips. With a little awareness, with a little consciousness brought to her, she suddenly started shaking with her whole hand, and it was totally different. It was so easy. And the other one, who was shaking with the stiff forearm, she suddenly softened her arm, and everybody could feel the difference. Do it with consciousness. Every touch you have, a touch that comes to you, be conscious of anything that touches you. If you don't like it, don't let it happen. If you don't like the way it's being done by someone you love, help them correct it. Say to them, please don't put your hand on the back of my neck while I'm driving. I hate it. It makes me feel terrible. But thank you for the affection. Put your hand on my arm instead. You know? And if somebody doesn't like what you're doing, if you don't like the way you're doing it, or if you're not thinking about the way you're doing it, don't do it. Don't touch children if you're not aware of what you're doing with your hands. It's not a bad thing to touch children. Children are okay to touch. Just be aware of what you're doing. Just do it with consciousness. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. I want to take a couple more of your calls. 212-209-2900. If you missed either of the two earlier programs on touch, the nature of touch, you can get those by going to the internet, going to thepositivemind.com, and that's our website, thepositivemind.com, and there it'll tell you radio program. You press the button and you could hear the last two programs. And if not, you could always call my office and we'll get you a way to get a copy of it. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
I love your show. You're amazing.
Thank you so much. What's your name?
Tony.
Tony, thanks.
Always a source of wisdom, you know, just amazing. Anyway, well, I had a question and a comment, really. You know, I've been reading about love and, you know, just living and being in love and, you know, having ups and downs in life, which is all normal. And I come across so many people that are not in relationships, and we're talking about for years. And am I wrong? This is my question to you, because I respect your opinion. I was thinking about myself, and I don't ever remember not wanting to be loved. You know? As soon as I got of reasonable age, I wanted a girlfriend. Then I got older, I wanted a serious girlfriend. Then I wanted a wife, you know? And And I'm thinking to myself, am I wrong? I've read that we're communal people. We need to be touched. We need to be loved. I hear it from you. I hear it in the I read it in the papers. Am I wrong in assuming that I don't ever remember not wanting to be loved, not wanting to have a partner?
No, but you don't.
What do you mean?
Is that what you're saying? You don't have a partner?
Well, no, I do. I just find so many people that I care for and love, and they're so afraid to be in a relationship.
Oh, let me tell you, there's something about, there's one style of person who loves being alone. There's a couple of style of people who really love, they feel safe in their aloneness. A lot of these people tend to be a little withdrawn. Sometimes they're a little paranoid, but that's not necessarily the case. But they tend to be experts, you know, they tend to be people
right.
who have a lot of fun alone. Now,
isn't
if you
that out
have,
of fear, though?
Yes, it could be. And if you have a tremendous amount of fun alone, and you get through life like that, and I'd say about one-ninth of the population is like that. You know, they have this tremendous enjoyment of their aloneness. And then when they step out in the world, they get nervous.
Right.
So that group of people, they're not crazy. They just are so afraid to invite somebody else in that it's always kind of a default, you know. They say,
right.
Well, I think I'll call up this person and go out on a date. I think I'll stay home and play with my railroad trains.
Right,
you know,
right.
I think I'll download from the internet. They default to their aloneness. Now, the good news is they have a good relationship with themselves. You know, that if they have a good relationship with themselves and they're afraid to get out with other people, I understand. Eventually, they may find a partner. And most of them do, eventually.
Yeah, but, you know what's fun? Thank you for your answer. But I find that most people that are alone, there's always like an underlying sense of anger and sense of resentment there. Against themselves and others.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm not sure if that's always there. I'm not sure if that's really there.
Okay, that's my question. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not so sure. You know, it's not always the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Can I share one more thing with you?
Sure.
I remember when I first had my daughter. My daughter is 13 now, and you know, as a man. As an adult male, you don't sleep. The only people I slept with were other women, you know? So it was really a weird feeling the first time my baby got home from the hospital and it's summertime and all I have is shorts on or underwears and she's laying next to me. She's only, you know, a year old, 6 months old. And it made me realize, you know, it was a little weird, not in any sexual way, but as an adult, the only time I ever laid down with someone was a woman, and it was usually what? My partner or for sexual reasons as an adult. So it was weird having that at first. It was like, I was like, wow, this is weird.
Yeah. And how old is your daughter now?
Oh, she's 13.
Okay. So she got through one of the real critical times with you from age 10 to 13. How about that awkward period of time when she's developing sexually? Do you feel uncomfortable with her now?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm, you know, never. I don't feel uncomfortable, at all. Not in that manner. No.
She's a lucky daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading an article recently, I talked about it yesterday, about young girls who lost their fathers because their fathers were afraid of their own sexuality. The fathers were afraid of themselves, like you said, you know, when your daughter first
came
home.
Yeah.
They were so afraid of themselves, they didn't trust themselves. So
right,
what they did
right,
was they
right.
pushed the daughter away.
Oh, no, you know, it's funny. All those things go through your head. Or Just yesterday, 2 days ago or so, she jumped on the sofa, jumped on me, and we were just hugging, watching a movie together. You know, that's my baby, and I'm in a relationship with a wonderful woman. So, you know, but, you know, thank God it's that way at least, you know. But, yeah, I've been blessed with that, you know.
Tony, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank
You're
you.
A great teacher. Thank you. Yeah. Touch and healing, you know, the medicinal aspects of touch have been known and utilized since the earliest recording medical years, 25 centuries ago. You got to use touch. Physicians will not apply a touch any longer unless it's diagnostic. You know, I mean, but these are healers, supposedly. You know, touch unleashes a stream of healing chemical responses including a decrease in stress hormones and an increase in serotonin and dopamine, and it secures the immune system. Touching increases the immune system's cytotoxic capacity, thereby giving and helping our body to maintain its defenses. Massage has been shown to decrease anxiety, depression, hyperactivity, inattention, stress hormones, and cortisol levels. And massage babies are more sociable and more easily soothed than babies who have never been touched or where touch has been avoided. So I guess I'm telling you, pointing you all in a direction, you know. I'm saying to you, with consciousness, but, you know, even though you listen to Tony, and as Tony talks about, oh, my daughter jumped on the couch, and we have a wonderful relationship, and she's 13, I'm sure there's some people out there screaming, that's no good, that's no good. You can't have that with your daughter. 212-209-2900. Time for a couple more calls. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I heard at the beginning of the show that you said that Gene Leloff was on Monday.
Yes.
Oh, I wish I was able to hear it.
Tuesday. She was wonderful. You can hear
it. Oh, I wish I was able to hear. I raised my son after reading the continuum concept in arms. What she called the in arms phase.
Absolutely.
Oh, and he, let me tell you something. I'll swear by it. He turned out so well. He is so outward going, so well adjusted, so just trusting and very cooperative too for a child. And people point this out all the time. Now, I know a lot of it has to do with predisposition, but I think that a lot of it had to do with the way, we raised, Jacob. That's my son. We carried him. We had a baby sling. We had a family bed. We didn't really separate him off from the world when we were with him. So he as a result now, he's just very, very cooperative, very sociable, just very happy. And people see it and they comment all the time. And I wish I was able to hear Gene Leadloff speak yesterday. I missed it, though.
Easy enough. You have a computer, don't you?
Yes.
Go to thepositivemind.com, and you'll go on the right-hand side. It'll say radio program, The Positive Mind, and right there on the website when you open it. And right in there, you just press that, and you'll find Tuesday's program.
Oh, that's great. I really swear by it. Everyone should read this book who's going to have a child. It's a great book.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
212-209-2900. Michael is amazing today. Ain't missing a beat. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I was listening to the program today, and I realized that as a single person who's not in a relationship and hasn't been for a long time, I'm not in a position where I feel confident about going out and having a relationship now just to get touch. And I'm also isolated by not working.
Mm-hmm.
And isolated by one choice, but actually because I just am not ready to get out there again. So what my question to you is, how can a person bring that touch into their life? Can they do that with themselves? Not necessarily just sexually, but I mean, can you get yourself going in a positive way with your own touch to yourself? And is that as good as, or what's, I mean, I know that when you have great love with people and you hug people that you love, that's a wonderful feeling. But
what
I don't want to create that just so this way I'm getting my daily dose.
Well, if you think of it as a daily dose, that's one thing. But I'll tell you something. I think someone like you would benefit tremendously from any kind of group.
I'm in a group now, but I understand all of that, and
okay,
I know it's
so,
important.
And then
that
I
get
also
out.
I think there are things you cannot do with yourself that you get with other people. You know, we all need to belong to something. And we need to belong. And I know that self-satisfaction is a wonderful thing. And being able to satisfy yourself is a great thing. And being able to touch yourself to a level of satisfaction is wonderful. But I think you really need the other people around.
Here's my question. I'll rephrase it. I need to get going. I'm not just going to get out there because I know myself. So So what I'm asking you is, can you jumpstart it a little bit by making sure that you're touching yourself or giving yourself self-massage or just paying attention?
It's a big question. I wish I had the time because we're about to go off the air. I'm running just a little late.
Okay. Are you going to continue the touch series?
I think I may. Or you could try and call me at my office, and I promise I'll talk to you about it.
Okay.
Or it'll send me an email at the positive at armanddemille@brainlink.com.
Oh,
armand@brainlink.com. All right? And I'm sorry I'm running out of time. We've got to get going again. My friends, nice to be with you. I'll be back with you on Wednesday, not Tuesday. A little more Al Green.
Can't explain myself.
Seems to me.